Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game.
I know.
Hello and welcome into the Pod After Touchdown Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host, Sam Hoppin, and I am joined by my co-host, Andrew Mackins, and our producer, Garner. How are you two doing today?
We are 1 week closer to football, Sam.
Closer to prospective football, as far as we know.
I mean, we're almost to July, and then after July, you're in August, and that's normally when the preseason happens. So, like, are we going to have a preseason? I just thought about that today. I'm like, probably not, but then we wouldn't have to worry about preseasons in the future. Set some precedent. I'd like to see that.
I sure hope so. That not having as much preseason would not be terrible, just purely for not having as many players get injured. Obviously is a big part, and maybe, I mean, they're adding an extra game in to the regular season soon, so got to give those players some rest. But Garner, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. In respect to that, you know, I'm just taking it one day at a time. I getting ready for the season. I'm not thinking too far into it because, again, the further I think, the more scared I get it's not going to happen. So, again, I'm just taking it one day at a time here.
Yeah, taking it one day at a time is very, very important. We are taking it 1 week at a time with our podcast. And today we are going to talk about some things that we were looking forward to in the offseason back in February, I believe. So going to take a quick look back at what those things were and where they ended up. We'll obviously start with our kickoff question and mental health minute. So with that, boys, are you ready to go?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Cool. Let's kick it off.
And this game is underway.
Okay, so we were just talking about the football season potentially not happening, which would be a major disappointment to the three of us and everyone listening. But assuming the season goes on, who is one player that you believe will disappoint fantasy football owners in 2020? Do I have a volunteer that wants to go first?
I mean, I guess I'll go here because I have two answers. I'll just go with one for now. I'll see if you guys take the other one later. And I'm going truly on, again, it's disappointed. I'm not saying he's going to do bad. I'm saying I think people are potentially expecting too much from him and going to get disappointed. It's AJ Brown. I think he's got potential to do good, but people are going to remember the last 5-6 games where he was averaging like 23 points a game and expect that to be his performance throughout the season. So again, I don't think he's going to do bad overall, but they're just going to be like, oh yeah, he can't maintain that pace.
Yeah, we've definitely talked about him a couple times, and I feel that same sentiment is you can't get too, you know, reach too far for him because someone in your league will. That's the biggest thing. So it's hard to be that person, especially if he doesn't play to expectations. For me, I went with Raheem Mostert, who I know is low on my rankings when we went through running back rankings a while back. And I think to your point, it's like, I think he can still do very well. And obviously a lot of people are going to be drafting him based on how he finished the season and how that San Francisco 49ers rushing offense is a top tier offense. A lot of that because of Kyle Shanahan. But the thing is, Kyle Shanahan has expressed that he wants to use multiple running backs in there. Raheem Mostert is 28 years old right now, actually. So it's taken him this long to actually like finally break out. And I'm just worried with the crowded backfield that, like, yeah, he's going to have some great dominant games, but then sometimes Tevin Coleman's going to have a good week or someone else is going to vulture touchdowns like Jeff Wilson.
Right.
And it's, you're just going to struggle and have headaches every week of putting him in your lineup or not.
Those are two really good picks and two that I agree with. They're both sort of second half heroes, if you will, guys that broke out towards the end of the 2019 season and got a little bit momentum heading into this season. One guy that I think will be disappointing that just played well all of last season is Darren Waller. And I've talked about him before and trying to pump the brakes with him, but I just think with a fifth round ADP, it's just far too rich for my blood. I mean, you're passing up on guys like Michael Gallup, Terry McLaurin, Marquise Brown. It's just so many great guys in that range that you're passing up to get someone at the tight end position who isn't at the top tier of Kelce and Kittle, but gets enough credit where he's going to be, I think, overdrafted. And the fact that they brought in so many little pieces, I mentioned this before, them bringing in Jason Witten and Nelson Agholor, they have Henry Ruggs, like they have a ton of these guys that I think there's just going to be too much separation of the targets throughout the offense that it sort of, they all, you know, chomp into each other's target share enough where not one person is valuable enough and stands out. So I'm just sort of staying away from Waller this year especially with the cost that he's associated with now.
No, I agree. I think that's a good point. Like you said, I mean, he's got potential. He still can be good. I mean, he can add value to a team, but not at the price you have to pay for him.
Garner, did you want to add your second player real quick?
Yeah, my other one, again, is probably more of a disappointment than I think he's going to do bad, is just Jonathan Taylor. I keep seeing him climb the draft boards here up into like early fourth round. And I mean, Marlon Mack is still there and he's still a really good running back. So I mean, he's going to have to fight for touches against somebody who's really skilled. And I don't see it happening early enough or strong enough in the season to warrant an early fourth round pick on him.
I like that you bring that up, Garner, because when we jump to things that we were looking at in the offseason, we're going to touch on this. So that's what they call a tease in the industry, as we've said before.
Great. Well, why don't we move into our mental health minute? And I believe, Andrew, you are going to share something that you found pretty interesting recently.
Yeah, this is a great tweet that Marquise Goodwin, now of the Eagles, actually sent out a while back, and luckily it's timely any time of the year, and I think it's just a good thing to think of in terms of perspective on life or in your day-to-day, whether it's your job or your personal life or whatever it is. He tweeted out, if you had $86,400 in your bank account, first off, that'd be amazing. But if you had that much money in your bank account and someone stole $10 from you, would you get upset and throw the remaining amount of $86,390 away? No. See, we have 86,400 seconds each day. Don't let a negative 10 seconds ruin your entire day. You run this shit, pay attention. So that tweet really resonated with me because I often, like even today, get in my own head about stuff that I think, like in the grand scheme of things, is not that big of a deal. And so thinking about, you know, okay, you have this minor setback in the middle of your day, take some time to collect yourself and vent or do whatever you need to do to get your kind of process that, and then make the most out of the rest of the 80 some thousand seconds that you have in your day.
That's a great tweet, and thanks for sharing that. I think bigger picture to just, you know, whether it, even not letting one bad day ruin your entire week or mood or stuff like that. I mean, I've had several days through the whole pandemic where I just don't get a lot done. I can't focus. I'm distracted by things going on and it's just not a productive day overall. But I need to realize that there are several hundred days in a year in my life and my career that I'll be able to make that up. So not to let one bad day, one bad hour, one bad minute really drag you down. There are plenty of opportunities to pick yourself back up. That's for sure.
100% agree. I mean, without repeating the same thing too much, but yeah, and I've had that where it's like a rough start to the morning or something, and I'll just take 10 minutes and just sit down, take some deep breaths, focus on positive things I have in the rest of the day. And then when I'm in that good state, then I can move forward and have a great rest of the day.
Great stuff. And don't forget, we are trying to spread some mental health awareness through our Mental Health Minute, as well as the GoFundMe that we have for the National Alliance of Mental Illness. And you can find the donation GoFundMe page for that on the Pod After TD Twitter account. The link is in our bio. So we would obviously appreciate any support that you can give, any dollar amount helps, but really appreciate everyone taking the time to listen to our Mental Health Minutes these past couple weeks. Well, with that, let's move into the meat of our show. And like I said, we're going to talk about some of the situations that we were monitoring this off season. So Andrew and I had a list of a couple of things that we were each looking out for, and we'll just sort of run through those, see what ended up happening. We won't talk at length because everyone's probably very well aware of the off-season moves and stuff that have happened, but get our take on the potential fantasy impact that each item had. So I'll start with one of mine, and the thing I was looking for is just where do the Dolphins go from here? Obviously, they were coming off of a season that not a lot of people expected great things from, ended up stringing together 5 wins, but then had a top 5 pick. They've obviously got some playmakers in Parker and Gesicki and Preston Williams that showed some promise, but where do they go? They obviously drafted Tua Tagovailoa, and I think we all entered the draft season assuming they would take a running back with one of their first couple of picks. I mean, several mocks had, you know, Jonathan Taylor or DeAndre Swift, players like that, going to the Dolphins because they, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick, for God's sake, was their leading rusher last year. but they ended up landing Jordan Howard in free agency. They traded for Matt Breida during the draft, so they added a couple more experienced and veteran backs. All things considered, I think the Dolphins are pointing up. I think Devontae Parker is probably the most likely to disappoint of this group. Again, going back to the kickoff question, knowing how he finished and the fact that people might be enamored with him. But I do think that there are a couple pieces in this offense that have some promise. If you're using a zero RB approach this draft season, Jordan Howard or Matt Breida are perfect candidates to grab in the 7th or 8th round. So, Andrew, any other thoughts on the Dolphins and their situation for 2020?
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, I love what the Dolphins did because they kind of validated what a lot of NFL analysts say, is that you don't really need to build your team around one of these playmaking running backs. They're kind of like a final piece that you add when you're ready to go for like a Super Bowl run. And so they added a lot of players on defense. And I think Tua obviously is the future of that franchise. So it will be interesting just to see like the way that Brian Flores, a defensive minded head coach, is building that unit. Is it going to be better than expected? And how is that going to influence their, like the number of pass attempts that the team has? Because obviously we want them to pass a ton so Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki can get downfield like they did last year. I feel like it's a bit nebulous when you have so many things or like pieces moving around and so many things rebuilding.
Let me ask you this, because like I mentioned, they drafted Tua, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is coming back. Most of us expect Fitzpatrick to start the season and Dolphins to bring in Tua partway through the season, depending on, you know, what the Dolphins' record is. I mean, they, as crazy as it sounds, they have a non-zero chance of competing for the AFC East title. So there is a real-world scenario where maybe Fitzpatrick is playing enough, well enough, that they keep him in. But does the thought of Tua getting brought in say week 6 or 7 scare you with drafting again Parker Gesicki or Williams, knowing that as good as he was in college, he'll need some time to develop. He's not going to be able to build as much chemistry with them this offseason. Where do you land on that?
Yeah, to keep it short, I would think, especially for Gesicki, like a quarterback's going to rely on a tight end more for like kind of the dump off targets. But Gesicki's really a downfield guy, so I would almost worry for him just as much as Parker. I think it was FF Ball Blast, like Kate from the Ball Blast team over there. She said shared some statistics about what other positions' production looks like when a rookie quarterback's in there. And it didn't look like anything super spectacular in terms of the low end and the high end. So I'd have to dive more into that and see like how much a rookie has impact on the rest of the offense. I think it's something if you're risk averse that maybe you'd want to stay away from.
Right. Well, there's another team that you were keeping your eye on, and that's the Arizona Cardinals, primarily wondering how the wide receiver core shakes out. Do they draft others with another early pick since they have Keyshawn Johnson, Demir Byrd, and Hakeem Butler? But nope, they didn't have to. They stole DeAndre Hopkins away from the Texans. The meme of Thanos asking what he had to give up to get DeAndre Hopkins and saying, nope, nothing, LMAO, when trading for Hopkins resurfaced today. So I just thought that was kind of funny. But I know we talked about the Cardinals actually several episodes ago when we answered our listener questions. What are you thinking about them right now? Any other recap that you want to go through for them?
Yeah, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins is one of my favorite players in the league. So him going to Arizona, I was like, well, is this arrow up or arrow down? I'm not exactly sure. The chemistry is one thing to think about, but I think Kyler Murray is definitely a serviceable quarterback, and we're expecting the second year development / breakout from him. So I've still got Hopkins up there with my top wide receivers. I think this is good for Christian Kirk as well. Take some pressure off of him in that receiver room. And as for the other guys, I think, you know, I'm only looking at them in Dynasty, but I've got my eyes on Andy Isabella and Hakeem Butler for the most part, just because of the draft capital invested in them. And they run a lot of 4 wide receiver sets in Arizona too.
Out of curiosity, I don't know if you have your ranks up, but where do you have Hopkins ranked right now?
I don't have it up offhand, but if I had to wager a guess, I'd have him like 3rd or 4th among wide receivers.
Okay. I think I've got him at 6th or 7th. I just don't believe that he'll be able to sustain the target share that he had in Houston, knowing that there are some better playmakers, I think, in Christian Kirk and Fitzgerald, and some of those ancillary guys that we mentioned will filter in on their 4 wide receiver sets. So I would peg him for maybe a 22 to 23% target share, which is not near the 30%+ target share he's had in the past, but he still, talent-wise, is one of, if not the best receiver in the game. So just curious. It'll be interesting to see how he fares in his first year with the Cardinals, because we obviously saw Odell Beckham last year with a lot of hype going to the Browns and going to Baker Mayfield. Now, obviously, OBJ was going from Eli Manning to Baker Mayfield, and now DeAndre Hopkins is going from Deshaun Watson to Kyler Murray, which some could debate is a downgrade, but it will certainly be interesting to follow that narrative this season.
Yeah, and a quick note on that, I think both teams still have kind of like middle of the pack offensive line situations, or Browns improved that this year, but I think the Cardinals are more competent in the head coaching department. So a lot of different factors to consider there.
All right. Moving on, this offseason obviously was one of the most stacked free agency markets for the quarterback position. And I really just wanted to take stock of where all of these guys were going, whether it's the old guys in Phillip Rivers, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees, or some of the younger guns in Jameis and Ryan Tannehill. Obviously, again, we don't need to rehash everything here, but Rivers is with the Colts. Brady is now with the Bucks. Jameis, unfortunately, doesn't have a starting job, and he's Brees' backup, who is still in New Orleans. Trubisky and Tannehill are staying put, but Trubisky has a little bit more competition now with the Bears bringing in Nick Foles. So real quick, Andrew, which of these movements do you think has the biggest or has had, I guess, the biggest shift in the fantasy football landscape this offseason?
Yeah, I think, you know, on previous episodes last year, we talked about this, is I've just drank the Jameis Winston Kool-Aid more than most. He throws a lot of interceptions, but he throws for a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns along the way. And I think he's kind of the most interesting person out of this group for dynasty purposes. We really focused on redraft here, but I've been getting more and more into dynasty football. And as the backup to a 38, 39-year-old quarterback, I think he's in a really interesting position to take over for a historically successful offense with Sean Payton.
Right. I agree. Having Jameis not have a starting job is kind of crazy. If you add him on your dynasty roster, it's a little bizarre that he threw for 5,000 yards and now doesn't have a starting gig. I think obviously Tom Brady replacing him in Tampa Bay and bringing Gronkowski along with him shakes things up quite a bit, but it was exciting to see these guys switch teams. It'll be even more exciting when we get to see them play football this fall. See what I did there? I'm trying to speak things into existence.
Yeah, one quick thing on that I just popped into my head is with more, you know, time off with like less practices and things like that, you could almost make an argument these like cerebral veteran quarterbacks, Rivers, Brady, and Brees, would have even more opportunity to flourish because they can play the game of chess at the line of scrimmage a lot better with other like defenses not being able to game plan. And that could work to their advantage. And you could see like, oh, they're not as tired or they're not as prone to injury from all this other practice that they normally have to go through.
Right. I mean, I know I've seen over the past couple of days, Tom Brady posting pictures and stuff of him working out and throwing balls with Rob Gronkowski and a couple other guys. So I know that chemistry is a big thing for Brady, but the getting down the playbook, the things like that, like they don't need to adjust to that. They've gone through this dozens and dozens of times. So there obviously isn't a skill gap like someone like Joe Burrow has to adapt to. And that brings us to your second thing that you were looking for, which was the Bengals wide receiver core. So another wide receiver focus here, but the Bengals obviously drafted Joe Burrow number one overall. Zach Taylor is this sort of young offensive mind. So what happens with these receivers in AJ Green, Tyler Boyd, John Ross, and Auden Tate? They drafted T. Higgins in the second round as well. So what do you think of these receivers? Are you taking any of them? Are you going to avoid them at all costs?
Yeah, I mean, I know we were projecting Burrow to go to Cincinnati. So thinking through that, like you said, the fact that COVID-19's in the way here makes things a lot more nebulous. And AJ Green with his injury situation, that makes it very iffy for me to draft him. I was scarred last year for drafting him at a value in the sixth round, and then he never played a game. So not really liking him this year, but that makes Tyler Boyd my favorite out of this group. Based on his age and kind of being in the prime years of his career. I like T. Higgins as a dynasty target if you guys haven't done your rookie drafts yet. John Ross and Auden Tate, I'm not drafting at this point. just because I feel like Burrow's going to gravitate to fewer targets than spread the ball around early on.
I agree with you. I like Tyler Boyd the best of this bunch and think he's a tremendous value in the seventh round, which is where he's going now. According to Fantasy Football Calculator, AJ Green has a sixth round ADP this year as well. I mean, he has the injury history, but I think depending on what my team looks like in the sixth round, I would consider taking AJ Green. If I've got, you know, two running backs and three receivers, or three running backs and two receivers, some split, like a fairly even split, yeah, I'd be much more likely to draft AJ Green, knowing he's sort of my first bench player or my first flex player, because if he does turn into the AJ Green of old, you've got a top 10 receiver that you're getting at a top 30 receiver price tag. So I'm really excited for what this offense will do. Obviously, it was a little stagnant at the beginning of the year and had a couple sparks towards the end, but Joe Burrow is certainly going to hopefully light a fire in this offense.
So quick question there, and then we can move on. If you are like in the middle of the sixth round and both AJ Green and Tyler Boyd are still there, which one are you going to draft?
I hate to give the answer, it depends, but it kind of depends. I mean, if I'm coming away in the first two rounds with a couple reliable receivers in, let's say, Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill, then I'd probably be more likely to draft Tyler Boyd as just sort of a safety pick of someone who's going to fill in case of an injury or potential bye week. If I have a couple players that I drafted in the fourth and the fifth round as my first two receivers and I'm looking for a bit more upside, then I would definitely lean with AJ Green. So again, it depends on the structure of your team. So any other thoughts on these Bengals receivers?
Nah, let's get to your draft stock.
So I'm actually going to lump these last two for us all into one and just,
okay,
we'll just rapid fire run through all these players, because we sort of just had a group of running backs and receivers that we wanted to see where they stood as far as ADP and what their situation ended up being. So
yeah,
I'll start with Austin Eckler. Obviously has the backfield sort of to himself, I guess. I mean, Justin Jackson's there. They drafted a running back as well, but he is, for all intents and purposes, the guy in, I almost said in San Diego, but in Los Angeles. He's currently being drafted as RB13 at the end of the second round. Are you going to have him on any of your teams, you think?
I mean, I'd like to, but the more I think about it, I was super high on him when he got his new deal, and the longer, as time goes on, I feel like I've cooled off on him a little bit, just because I don't know if he's able to keep up the efficiency that he kept up last year. Like, he did a lot on not very many carries, and a lot of it was on his receptions. Plus, this offense has a really good defense, so does that help him, or does that hurt him because he's more of a pass-catching specialist?
I don't know. I really don't. It's tough to think of what this offense is going to look like without Phillip Rivers under center. I'm worried that whether it is the defense or the change in quarterback, that Eckler's targets are going to go down drastically. So I don't know if I'll have him on any of my teams. I mean, again, I think he's certainly a talented back, but with the touchdowns and the reception count he had last year, I think there's a ton of negative regression coming his way. As far as a couple of other running backs that you actually had on your mind, you had Miles Sanders and then in parentheses third question mark, and Devin Singletary in parentheses second question mark with three exclamations. Like, what's going to happen with these guys? Are they really going to be drafted this high? Well, it's actually flipped. So Miles Sanders is RB11 and is being taken in the second round. Devin Singletary is RB18 and is being drafted in the third round. Between those two, which value do you like the most.
Yeah, so the funnier thing at this point is I've been thinking about Miles Sanders in the same conversation, the same tiny tier of him, Austin Eckler, and Kenyon Drake, kind of all at the end of like the top 10 running backs. So I'm a lot higher on Sanders right now, even though their guard in Philly, Brandon Brooks, sounds like he's out for the season due to injury. They didn't bring in any new running back competition for Sanders. So
yeah,
he could be like have the talent to get the vast majority of the snaps and the opportunity in what we think is that, you know, Doug Peterson running back by committee.
You didn't hear me, but they didn't bring another running back in yet.
Okay. Is Devontae Freeman really going to turn you off to Miles Sanders? Like,
I don't think he's going to turn me off.
I think if they bring him in, it's going to be like he's going to take over all of Corey Clement's touches or something.
You mean Boston Scott?
Well, no. Corey, like, if you think they're this running back by committee, like, yes, Sanders gets the vast majority. Scott gets like 15% of the touches. And then the remaining 5-10%, whatever it is, goes to the third guy, whether that is Devontae Freeman or whether that's Corey Clement. That's the way I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. I mean, either as it stands now, I like Sanders better. I think people are drafting Devin Singletary as if the Bills brought nobody in and Zach Moss is now there basically taking over the Frank Gore role. And Frank Gore had a significant role last year. So I can't see drafting Devin Singletary any higher than the mid to late fourth round. So will be interesting to see where he ends up going. The last running back that actually did change teams. Again, we talked about the DeAndre Hopkins trade, but that's David Johnson, who we thought might reunite with Bruce Arians in Tampa Bay, but nope, got traded to the Houston Texans and will be competing with another D Johnson and Duke Johnson for some touches. He's currently going as RB21 in the fourth round. I don't hate it. I don't love it. Again, he's one of those guys that it just seems like a waste of a pick. I think there are higher upside running backs later, you know, a round or two later. I think there are more reliable receivers that you can get in that part of the draft. I mean, knowing that the Texans barely throw to their running backs and the injury history that David Johnson has is a little bit worrisome.
Yeah, if you don't mind, can we lump like Singletary and David Johnson, given their ADP, in with these other rookie running backs? Because I was mostly curious, like, where all these running backs we've been talking about are going to land with all the other rookies. And obviously, like, each scenario is slightly different, but, you know, you've got Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers, J.K. Dobbins, even Keyshawn Vaughn, your little favorite Keyshawn Vaughn. A lot of these guys, as Garner mentioned, have someone else in the backfield still there, but a lot of these guys are highly touted prospects in terms of their talent and what they did at the collegiate level. So, I mean, I'm glad to see that Singletary's ADP is higher than these guys, but like, which of these rookies would you rather have than, say, David Johnson, just because you think they're going to get more opportunity?
So in a vacuum, probably just Clyde Edwards-Helaire, maybe Jonathan Taylor, Keyshawn Vaughn, and that might be it. But again, if I start off my draft with a couple stud running backs and I'm in the fifth round and DeAndre Swift is sitting there, or Cam Akers, I'd rather take a shot on one of those two guys, knowing that there is the upside potentially of them winning that job and being an every down back. It's the unknown versus the unknown at this point, and I'd rather shoot for the upside with some of these rookies. But let's move on to a couple receivers to close the show out. Two that you had on your mind are going back to back right now. That's Courtland Sutton, who is wide receiver 16th, and DJ Moore, who is wide receiver 17. Both going in the fourth round. I think we both know that DJ Moore is our favorite of those two. Correct me if I'm wrong, though.
Yeah, Sam, I've thought a lot about DJ Moore specifically, and from everything I've heard and seen and experienced with him in the NFL and the way people talk about him, I feel like I've never been more confident in a player's breakout potential and just sustained success in the NFL. And that's coming from a very indecisive person. So I think it goes a long way to say, like, DJ Moore's in my top 10. I think I have him ranked 7th right now out of wide receivers. And so I'm at the point where I'm willing to take him in the third round and just buy in completely to his floor and his upside. He's got a better QB coming in than Kyle Allen. He's in a new offense that I think is going to cater to him. And he's got positive touchdown regression coming his way. So I think he's in an amazing position. As far as Cortland Sutton goes, his stock is down, but we've seen him do a lot of great things on the field. And we've talked time and time again about COVID-19 messing up rookies' entry into the NFL. So I wouldn't write him off necessarily.
I'm in 100% lockstep with you. DJ Moore all the way. He's going to win people some leagues in the third or fourth round if you can get him. The last two receivers we'll touch on are, again, also going back-to-back, and that's Michael Gallup as wide receiver 27 and Terry McLaurin as wide receiver 28. I'm for sure going to be taking McLaurin over Gallup because, I mean, he's the number one, and as excited as I am about Steven Sims and his potential to have a decent season for the Redskins.
LOL.
Well, come on.
It's not going to stop you from taking Terry McLaurin. That's where
No. Right. That's not what I'm getting at. He's not going to stop me from taking McLaurin. Gallup is, if he's not the two, he's the 1B to Amari Cooper, and he'll be competing with CD Lamb. So I think that's another pretty obvious pick, at least in our books.
Two thumbs up.
Okay. Let's end the show on a high note then with a couple thumbs up. Does that tickle your fancy?
Yeah. I'm ready to go. I'm good. Cool. This felt like a good one.
Good deal. Well, thank you all for listening. We will be back next week. It is an extra special episode. It is the premiere of Garner's Gaming Corner. He's got some fun games wrapped up for us, ready to test our fantasy football knowledge. But until then, you can follow Andrew at Andrew Mackins. You can follow Garner at Garnther. You can follow myself, Sam, at Sam Hoppin. And you can follow the pod account at Pod After TD. And until Garner's Gaming Corner, the kick is
good.